That's right, Candy Girl. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons here at 720 WGN with John Landecker. And we are going to talk candy, and we're going to talk sugar with an official candy historian, Susan Benjamin. Good evening, Susan.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Well, not bad. You know, it's the fall. It can't be all bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're chowing down on some candy. Chowing down on some candy right now?
No, I don't eat that much candy, actually.
Well, no one should eat that much candy, right?
Well, you know, here's a surprise for you.
Okay.
Candy started as a medicine in the apothecaries. And sugar has been one of the most admired and esteemed medicines all the way through human history. So what do you think of that?
Well, you know that song, A Spoonful of Sugar Makes the Medicine Go Down, whatever, what is that, Sound of Music or something, or Mary Poppins?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell everybody who you are.
Sure.
Susan Benjamin, she is communications and the history of research, communications and the history of culture for almost 40 years, the author of 10 books, a journalist, a college professor, a communication strategist. She has a book, Sweet as Sin, the unwrapped story of how candy became America's favorite pleasure. And I'm ready to hear. And you also have a store, right?
I have a business. Yep, we're the only research-based historic candy company in the country. And we have a shop, we have an online store, we sell to museums, we sell to specialty stores. So that's what we do. We spread the word about the amazing stories of candy from all over the country and, of course, much from Chicago.
Oh, absolutely. Where would you like to start? I mean, you're talking since, what, the turn of the... How far back do you go in your research on candy?
Prehistory. Pretty far. Really far.
Boy, that's
really
bad.
Really, really far.
Before the beginning of time. Wow.
Well, the beginning of written time.
Yes. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So the oldest chewing gum ever found, speaking of Chicago and Wrigley, the oldest chewing gum ever found was in Sweden, and it was a piece of chewed resin, which is how all chewing gum started, and had teeth marks in it, and the teeth marks belonged to a Neanderthal teenager, it turns out, so say science. By the time Wrigley, Chicago's darling, of course, by the time Wrigley started making his gum, they were still using resins as the center of the concoction that made the chewing gum. And in the case of Wrigley and others, Adams and so forth, it was the resin from the sapodilla tree called chiclay.
So that led to chiclets?
That's true. Yep. That led to the chiclet.
I know my sugar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'll say.
What
that must make you sweet, right? I've heard that one before.
That depends on who you talk to. There have been gums. Let's go gum for a moment. There have gums that have come like Black Jack, clove or whatever it is, and they're
Black
here.
Jack, clove, Demon's gum.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then they come into vogue, and then they seem to disappear and then come back like as a novelty. What's the story with the cycle? Mm. Is there a gum cycle?
Well, what you're talking about really is most candy that has any history and any breath to it. They seem to come and go, and a lot of it has to do with pricing in supermarkets where if you want to sell your candy, you have to pay a fee to the supermarkets, which are per supermarket upwards of $20,000 just to be able to sell there.
What?
And so,
really?
So a lot of the older candies people aren't as interested in. And then when candy makers bring it back, whoa, they're really interested in, like, the Natco recently.
Yes, yes,
which,
yes.
Which gets people to notice them and buy them. But you know what? We all have memories of these candies, and when they return, are you really buying Wrigley's chewing gum? Are you really buying the Natco wafer? No, you're buying the memory of the people
absolutely.
Who gave it to you and the past that you have with it, yeah.
And lots of times, for whatever reason, and it may be just because people are older or and their taste buds aren't quite what they used to be, that it doesn't quite pack the same power. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the same kick to it, so to speak.
Well, that's because the ingredients aren't the same, and because you're made in a different way. And so the most recent new arrival is Bazooka Bubblegum, which was only gone a short time, but it was missed. It's back, and they have the original. And when you smell it and taste it, ooh, it's really good. But, you know, I remember a kid eating that. It's not the same. It isn't the same.
Yeah.
It isn't just that we're all getting up there. It's that they're not the same.
It.
A lot of them aren't.
They changed it. We're talking with Susan Benjamin, a candy historian. If you care to join in, 312-981-7200. I'm unpacking some more candy when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Landecker with Susan Benjamin, a candy historian and author of Sweet as Sin, the unwrapped story of how candy became America's favorite pleasure. While we were during that break, Susan, I suddenly flashed back to a memory that I had when I was, I guess I must have been somewhere around 7 or 8 years old, and I was with my family and relatives in Indiana, and I don't know, we went somewhere at night, and I was in the car, and I was tired, and my uncle was a doctor, and he goes, here, have some candy. And I ate the candy, and boing, I was wide awake. How's everybody doing? Where are we going now? I mean, that is, I don't know if anybody else has significant candy memories of their childhood, but I've never forgotten that. And the idea that if I took this, bang, it might assist me in avoiding sleep for maybe an hour or so. And that's one of the side effects, really, of sugar. But then there's the crash, isn't there? The sugar blues, they called it.
Oh, you know, I think too much, I mean, this is very unpopular to say, but I think much too much is being made of the horrors of sugar. If you don't have sugar, you die. We cannot survive without it. But we don't know where our sugar is coming from. In the upside to candy is that we know sugar's in it, we know how to manage it, and we know how to eat it. So really, in the end, candy isn't as fattening as other things and certainly doesn't have as much sugar. In terms of what you're saying about the boing that we get, it isn't the sugar so much as some of the other ingredients that are in the candy, like with chocolate. There's an ingredient very similar to caffeine. That's what gives us the boost. And it's also, you're a kid. And you know candy, you know it from birthday parties, and you know it from the holidays and all sorts of things. So it's also that relational kind of interaction where you feel good and excited because of that, too.
I didn't mean to besmirch candy. I was just relating
to story.
Oh, you
can? People do all the time.
No. I do. No.
Yeah.
I'm the last person on earth that's going to say anything negative about candy. In fact, I'm more of a traditionalist. You know what I mean? Like, chocolate has become like a gourmet item over the last years, with all sorts of different packaging and ingredients and this and that, and, adding things like ginger. And, you know, the more I get into those, the less I like them. And then every once in a while, I'll just go back and grab one of those old-fashioned Hershey's milk chocolates, and I'm like, now that's what I'm talking about. That's what I want.
So let me ask you, what do you like about it? Why do you love it so much?
I like the taste. I like the way I like the way it melts in my mouth, so to speak.
Mm-hmm, nice.
The texture, if you will.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
If sushi were candy, that would be it. You know, why do you like sushi?
Yeah.
Well, I like the texture. I like, you know, the way it feels in my mouth, so to speak.
Right.
And the same thing for chocolate. Although, uh-huh. I want to ask you, as a college professor, as an author of books on candy, when was it that you decided in your career arc to say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to investigate and be a candy historian. What was that moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I actually, this is my third career, and I've been doing it for 11 years now. I was a journalist and a researcher early on. And in fact, some of the pieces that I wrote were distributed by Knight Ridder Tribune of Tribune, and was in the Chicago Tribune, I'm proud to say. However, I was really tired of what I was doing in that phase of my life, and I was analyzing language and figuring out things about communication, and it was wonderful, but I was bored. And somebody asked me a question about candy. And because I had spent so much time researching things, I just started looking into candy, and it was mesmerizing. I was like, oh, my gosh, here's the story of our country, of the people who live in our country, of everything, and nobody knows about it. And yet people like you and like everybody loves candy, has special candies that they love, and have no idea of what it means in terms of how we are as a nation and how we are as family members. So I left my old career and I jumped into this one and never looked back.
We have a call from Dave is on the line here at 720 WGN. Good evening, Dave. You got a question, comment?
Good evening. It's not a question. It's a comment on the clove gum.
Yeah.
I think they brought out that clove gum back during Prohibition to cover up the breath of the cocktails with the bathtub gin.
Is that true, Susan?
The reality is, I have to tell you that most of the chewing gums and hard candies, even the Lifesaver, were used as a way to cloak the smell of cigarettes and booze, and heightened during Prohibition, when, of course, people were drinking, but they didn't want anyone to know about it, at least not when they left the speakeasies. So the clove gum is definitely one, and pretty much everything that you can find around that time period had, one way or another, seemed to have some kind of association with that, yes.
Good call, Dave. Thanks.
All right, well, you're okay.
Yeah, so what did we learn? That means if you get next to somebody and all of a sudden there's this overwhelming smell of some kind of gum, they're probably drunk. No, I don't know if that's true or not.
Right, watch out for them,
Now, my mother's family were farmers, rural, and I remember a distinct candy, and I something along the lines of horehound, is that a name of a candy? What is that?
Yes, and you remember that. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the horehound is a really traditional candy, and it may have been more prevalent amongst rural families because it's of the mint family, so it's easy to grow.
Yes.
It has a different flavor, though. It's a little bit on the bitter side.
Yeah.
Used as a medicine, and as all candies started, I mentioned. But even to this day, we sell horehound, and people come in looking for it because they have a stomach ache or because they heard it was good for sore throats or whatever. So, yeah, it was very popular and certainly easy to grow as being from the mint family.
Yeah, in fact, some stores, I don't remember exactly where I saw this, but they had a display that was labeled like old-fashioned candy, and there was horehound, and then they had some other flavors, but they were all, I guess they were trying to communicate the fact that these were manufactured in the old-fashioned way, and if you wanted to go back that to your memory that was that long ago, you know, try this. And I did, and it was good. So
you liked it, yeah. So can I tell you why it was called the
sure.
War Hound? Because people always wonder.
You can say anything. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we should let people know the whore is the word hoary, which is an old English word for a kind of texture. Mm. So the and hound is the word for candy. So it was the whorehound plant has almost like little hairs on it. It's a hoary-looking plant,
gotcha.
Kind of not smooth. And so it was called whorehound candy.
Now, you mentioned also lifesavers, and then
yes.
and just now about how people would take some of this candy because they wanted to feel better. Maybe they had indigestion. And I know that certainly some peppermint lifesavers or spearmint, not just Lifesaver brand, but any hard candy along those lines or peppermint oil can be useful in settling an upset stomach.
Yes, and the candies, as I mentioned before, it's so interesting. They go all the way back to medicines, and the ingredients in the candies are the ingredients that were, even today, the flavors were medicinal at one point, and at the heart of them, as I had mentioned before, also don't want to repeat, but was sugar. Sugar was considered a real significant aspect of that. Yeah, that's true.
And where does taffy fit into all of this?
Taffy?
Yeah.
Oh, taffy is very interesting. It originated really with enslaved people who were creating sugar in the bottom of the sugar process was molasses. So they would pull the molasses and turn it into a kind of a taffy. Later on, that taffy got more and more flavorful and varied, and then really took off in Atlantic City, where it was sold by the seaside and earned the name saltwater taffy. But there's no salt water in
water
it. It never was.
Right.
The taffy you get in Chicago is the same as what they sell at the beach. It's the same thing.
You are really impressive in your wealth of knowledge about the history of candy. So I'm just going to loaf out one. Who was the first one to come up with a peppermint candy cane for Christmas?
Well, that really isn't known.
Oh, okay.
But the candy cane originated in Germany, and it was made from the pulled candy stick, which is just a stick. And then somehow in Germany, they wound up hanging the cane on trees, and not necessarily for Christmas. And then it became more and more associated with Christmas. And then somewhere along the line, the stripe was added, and the stripe had been around in candy sticks also. So it was more festive and more interesting, and it was added then. Yeah, so it has a long history.
Now, in this book, Sweet as Sin, the unwrapped story of how candy became America's favorite, I'm hoping that these stories and others are in there.
Yes, they are. More than you can imagine.
That's exactly where I'm headed. So how do I get this book?
Well, you can get it online, either on Amazon or at my shop website, which is TrueTreatsCandy.com. And we have the book there. And I will sign it to whoever would like to get a signature if you purchase one there.
Well, thank you very much. Do you have a personal favorite candy?
You know, it's such a good question. And people ask me all the time. So
well,
I will tell you, I love a candy whose origin is with the Turkish Delight, which people know from Chronicles of Narnia, made in the year 900. It evolved into my favorite candies, which were, believe it or not, starting in the year 900, the jelly bean.
Yes.
1860s was made from the Turkish Delight. I love those, and I love gummy candy, which also had originated in the Turkish Delight.
Well, as long as we're mentioning it, mine is a conglomeration of different types of licorice called All Sorts.
Yes, I know them well. Yeah, good.
That's where if you want to you know, John, you want to head for some sugar? Yeah, where can I find the all sorts? That's where I go, man. Mm.
Mm-hmm. They're British. Are you British? Are you of British descent?
Scots-Irish and German, but no. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they originated in the late 1800s in England, the all sorts. And the candy maker was showing the different licorices, and he dropped the trays, and they were everywhere. And the customer was like, oh, my God, can I get them just like that all mixed up? There are all sorts of licorice. And he said, yeah, and called them all sorts, and here we are today.
Susan, thank you so much for being with us. Susan Benjamin, candy historian and author of Sweet as Sin, the Unwrapped Story of How Candy Became America's Favorite. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's been a real pleasure.